maning police, maning guests, officials from the department. This is a portfolio committee meeting of human settlements. Just a word of welcome to everybody who has joined us today. One of the things that we had agreed upon, please.
I'm trying to assist you. Someone is at the phone, so this is my meeting on, so that someone can be the city office before you send me.
Okay. One of the things that we had agreed upon, as the parliament and portfolio committees, is the importance of empowering committee members of parliament, committee members, so that by the time we exit, at least we have some skills that will be able to enable us to play a role in the society, even if we are no longer members of parliament. So that at the end of the day, we don't want to hold on to being members of parliament for the sake of holding on, because we don't have anything else to do. So we just want to make sure that there are options around. So today, mainly, we have invited institutions of higher learning to come and present to us. This is a decision that was taken by this committee at its strategic session, which took place at Arabella, to say one of the main things that we must do is to make sure that we invite institutions to come and present to us on courses that they offer that are relevant to this committee, so that as we assist members to be empowered, we are able to know which institutions we can use. So we've been joined by three institutions, if I'm correct. University of Witwatersrand is here, University of Stellenbosch is here, and University of Free State. We are very honored. But the way we will be doing the presentation is that when one university is doing the presentation, the others are outside, so that each one gives their own presentation without copying from the original. Because if one presents first and the others present last, they might decide to adapt theirs based on the first one. So we just want to give us their best without copying from the original. So yes, so we will start with, I'm going to hand over to Mr. McLean to do the introduction, and then we will then start straight away. Over to you, Mr. McLean.
Good morning, honorable members of the portfolio committee. Good morning, honorable chairperson. It is a great pleasure for us to come here once again. As we are professionalizing the sector, it fulfills our purpose when the leaders of the sector are going to be the champions of ensuring that the professionalization program is indeed given the respect and authority that it deserves, starting with the portfolio committee itself in terms of the empowerment program. I have with me Mr. Brandon Boyce. Mr. Brandon Boyce is the champion of the professionalization program of the department. I will ask him to take the portfolio committee through some context of professionalization, where we will better understand why it is important that we professionalize. Then Dr. Boshoff will take over from him. Thank you. morning all. Do I have the floor, Chair?
Yes, please.
I see the orientation of the screen is culturally incorrect. You cannot have the screen facing the back of the chair. You've got so, okay. So then I'm covered. As you've heard, my name is Brendan Boyce, and mine is really to bring leadership, direction, and a lot of passion to the whole notion of professionalizing the bureaucracy. And I've prepared a short presentation, it's only 50 slides, of which I'll only use 5. Okay, so very, very quickly. The first question that we need to deal with is why professionalize human settlements delivery? That is the question that needs to be answered. So what I'm going to try and put to you very briefly is a case, a evidence-based case that says there are certain material and fundamental benefits which we as South Africans can derive from a process of professionalization. And we want to start at the top level. We are moving from the premise that we want an internationally competitive, high-performance civil service. Right? I was reading the Sunday Times, and there was a cartoon, a very disturbing cartoon, which I didn't bother to add, because it might rock our sensibilities. And it had 4 captions. It had Eskom, and it just had darkness. It had SAA, and it had a plane grounded with cobwebs on it. Right? It had, the other one was residents waiting for water and someone pushing a wheelbarrow bringing water. So that's the perception of what it means to be a public servant. It means an efficiency, it means...
Sorry, Brendan, so there was no cartoon for someone waiting for a house?
No. Fortunately, there was no cartoon for someone waiting for a house. So the idea is that there is a long history of development of the public service internationally. There's different models that we can follow. We know of the French model, where the bureaucracy is politically aloof. That you have, that means you have professional civil servants that start at age 21 and finish at age 65. We have the American system, which is the administration system, which means once Obama goes, he goes with his officials, right? We in South Africa have adopted a very different mode, which is already captured in the NDP, and I'm not going to talk to it. Right? So there are international models of running a professional civil service which we can follow. And secondly, the private sector is a leader in setting benchmarks for professionalization. And we need to observe those trends. Thirdly, South Africa is moving towards a knowledge economy. Every city you go to, people are talking about Wi-Fi, connectivity and convergence. I was talking at NMMU last week, and of the top 20 megatrends worldwide, the top 4, one is connectivity and convergence, which means that people are demanding information. The more you have, the more you want to use. So South Africa as well is moving towards the knowledge economy, and we need to embrace that as a civil service. Then I'm not going to bore you with the NDP, but the NDP chapter 13 very clearly talks about building a capable state. How do you have a capable state if the functionaries in the civil service are not positioned towards high performance? By high performance, I mean somebody who delivers results consistently at a high level. Not a hit and miss thing. But you build a house today, and it has a lifespan of 5 years. You want to build a house where people can actually raise their children and raise their grandchildren. So when we talk about
professionalization, we're talking about quality issues. We're not just talking about papers, we're talking about quality issues. And then thirdly, the current financial context is one of austerity, where the Minister of Finance is saying, do more with less. And that message strikes home, particularly when it talks to the public service. Now, in South Africa, we've traveled a particular journey in terms of understanding how we want to operationalize professionalization in our context, and we've followed a certain path. If you look at the diagram that I have there, initially in 1994, there was a loose partnership between the Public Service Training Institutes and higher education, and that gave birth, I don't know if people know about SAMD. When I was a young civil servant, there was something called SAMD, right? So that was the South African Management Development Initiative. And it was it came out of a particular model. It wasn't very successful, if I might add. It wasn't very successful. And I can tell you why, but I don't want you to go there for now. Out of SAMD, and SAMD is now defunct, there was a process of a presidential review and various task teams which gave birth to the Public Administration and Leadership Academy in 2006, which morphed into PALAMA. And now we actually have moved away from PALAMA into the National School of Government, which has been operationalized. So we've traveled a particular path, and that talks broadly to the public service agenda to professionalize. As I'm talking to you now, there's a conference in Pretoria where all government departments are meeting right now to talk 2 days about professionalization. It is high on government's agenda. Okay, so, and our Minister Sisulu, is a particular champion of professionalization, given the different hats that she's worn as minister. So there is some kind of coherent trend. Now, if you look at that picture, it tells you a lot. You can have all the resources in the world. You can have all the staff. You can have all the financial resources. You can have all the technical resources. If you don't know how to put them together in an efficient manner, you'll be doing that. You'll be standing on a pile of ladders trying to see what's on the other side. So when we talk about a knowledge economy, we're talking about talented, critical thinking, socially responsive, globally competitive civil servants who can provide solutions and not provide excuses. That's the key. And the orientation is to say, service delivery, we don't want qualifications for qualification's sake. But we want to embed competencies that say we want to accelerate service delivery and we want to improve people's lives. So the high performance that we're trying to get is directly linked to service delivery. These things are not linked. If you go to school to get retrained or to learn a new skill, it should be directly linked to your competencies of your job and it should be linked to increased or enhanced performance, better use of resources. Etc. Now, I've got different diagrams. I'm not going to bother you with a lot of these diagrams. But what is fundamental is the point that we are trying to do as professionalization. Key to a efficient public service is a process of identifying the best talent to solve the biggest problems, right? If I have to say to you, rank the worst challenges that South Africa is facing, just rank the worst, you'd say jobs, because we need people to be employed, employment creation. You would say land issue, because it's sensitive politically and we've got a heavy history of dispossession in this country, which you cannot deny. And then you'd say shelter. So housing is among the top three big issues that if in just this generation we can crack those three issues, even if we can crack one of those three, we would have made a quantum leap forward as a nation.
right? Now, if you were to assemble a team, wouldn't you assemble the best team to deal with those three issues? You wouldn't assemble a team of be average, low performing people that don't have passion, that, you know, you would be falling asleep as I'm doing this presentation. You want top performers, bright minds, talented young youth. So a professionalization agenda says, how do we source the best, brightest, most hardworking, innovative young people to come and deal with the biggest challenges this country faces? If we were in America and you ask a kid, what do you want to be? They know the best profession in America, kids want to go to NASA. In South Africa, if you ask an average kid, what do you want to do? They want to become a doctor. That is clear. So we need to change those perceptions that the public service is a last choice. The public service should be a first choice because it's the place where people can make the biggest impact on this nation and take our generations forward. So the first issue should be onboarding. How do we get the best, getting them? How do we get the best minds to be working on the biggest challenges that we're facing? And how do we retain them? Right? Because once kids get trained and they become mobile, they don't want to stay in the public service. Right? So we want to also grow them. That means retraining and retaining, and then also keeping. And there needs to be a certain philosophical and value change, which we'll talk about, I'll talk about later. I've spoken about this, I'm not going to speak about this. We know what it means, but, right, let me come here. Now, there are new trends in South Africa. People are not willing to sit and suffer in silence anymore with the backlog. People are, there's a new activism which says, which is moving beyond civil disobedience. Civil disobedience says, I'm suffering because there's an unjust situation and I'm willing to protest, but I'm willing to go to jail for that. If I break the law, I'll go to jail. So civil disobedience talks about consciousness. You believe in the justice of your cause, right? You protest, and when you go to jail willingly. Right? Martin Luther King pioneered that, right? But in South Africa, we have a slightly different adaptation of that. People protest violently, right? And there's a lot of civil disturbance, violent protest, which is disturbing in a democracy. So the question becomes, how does the public service deal with that? So someone has to go and negotiate with those people. Someone has to deal with their demands. So you need somebody who can engage the community. Someone who's socially conscious, who understands what it means to live in a shack, who understands the plight of the wretched of South Africa, the angry of South Africa. Now, we know, what does that say? We know that we are sitting on a ticking time bomb, which is the housing battle. It's a ticking time bomb. It's a problem for any democracy is based on the rule of law. If you have people occupying land, which erodes the rule of law, you actually have a contradiction. So we have to address the big battles, and we have to address it fast. Now, when we talk about professionalization, we want to deal with the individual. If the individual is a leader like yourself, an executive decision maker like yourself, we want to make sure that they have an orientation to make strategic decisions quickly and intelligently, right? If you are a executive manager in the department, we want to make sure that we equip you to deal with that. If you are a project or operations manager, you should be equipped to deal with that. If you are a administrator, so we have four bands where we encourage self-directed learning, where you as an individual identify the competencies that you want to improve. In your case, it would be strategic political leadership, executive decision making. That's that's the audience that we're talking to now. And that's what the universities are going to talk to say, how do we ensure that we have the best knowledge, the best science, the best systems to deal with the problems we have. I pause, Jay. I'm not going to go further. I think I've said the same.
Thank you very much. Yeah, you did set the scene. Some of us will remember some of these presentations when we were doing orientation, when we were tackling it, particularly the last part. Over to you, Mr. McLean.
Thank you, Chair. Now we will ask Dr. Bosho to do the presentation. Doctor.
Dr. Bosho, which university?
Sorry. It's the University of Advanced Land.
The University of Advanced
Land. The School of Planning and Housing.
Aha. So that's the first presentation. Over to you, sir.
Settlement milieu is extremely broad, as I'm sure you're aware. Right? So it's not just housing, it's a whole range of issues, health services, etc., etc. So some of the other courses which people could attend are not necessary for a degree, although we may be working towards that, but certainly one could attend and get either a certificate of competence or a certificate of attendance, depending on what you do and the assignments and marks obtained, etc., etc. But those can be anything from purely interest to really improving the workplace and people's place and everything that Brendan's just been talking about. Okay. So, for example, some of those courses that we are looking at would relate to climate change and settlements and disaster risk management. Those are things that are perhaps spoken about in general, but not necessarily always spoken about with specific regard to human settlements. I can talk about that a little in more detail if you wish as well. But if we just take the example of climate change and disasters, it could be that we spend years engaging in policy, delivery, etc., etc., but we fail to take account of really important developments such as climate change and the effect of disasters, which actually could ruin everything that we've been involved in terms of policy, etc., over a period. In other words, one fell swoop can destroy a settlement quicker than any bad policy can, right? So we are specifically looking at those kind of issues as well, besides what I might term the traditional issues relating to housing and settlement. So it's possible to do those courses. I'll show you a list in a while. And then, of course, we can also customize courses. So, I mean, we have a whole university to draw on in terms of a whole lot of different departments and disciplines and specializations and expertise, as well as people who are linked to the university. So, for example, in our courses, we often have guest lecturers, experts in the field, or whatever. So it's not confined to a tiny little band of people in the department. It's very wide range. So we can do that. I'll give you some examples of some of the courses. What I'm talking about now is that first category of credit-bearing courses. Okay, so in other words, these are courses that could be used as a standalone if you just want to learn about some of the stuff, or could be the building blocks for a degree. So these are all the NQS level paid. So we'd be looking at the whole issue of sustainability, which is on everybody's lips. Sustainability happens to be my area, it's what I teach. And I've come to calling sustainability the universal adjective. Why? Because everybody uses it all the time. So as I say to my students, look out for it. You'll hear people using the word sustainability in front of everything. Even heard of sustainable wars, if that's such a thing. Sustainable books, sustainable wars. You can just, it's a nice little exercise. Look out for it and see how often sustainability is employed. Universal adjective. I want to look smart. Check in sustainability. Okay. But not too many people could really talk to you about sustainability for a long time. Okay, so we look at that issue for one of the courses. And of course, because we have an holistic perspective, in other words, we look at things in a very broad kind of way, we don't only look at environmental sustainability or economic or social, we look at everything, technological as well. Okay, so in many people's minds, if they're talking sustainability, they tend to think of something other than the environment or the economy. But without getting into the lecture, which I'm tempted to do, I can't help myself, but one cannot talk about sustainability without considering all those aspects at the same time, right? So it's not enough to just look at environmental sustainability or economic. Those things have to be traded off all the time. Right, I'm going to stop myself there. So we look at social and technical dimensions of sustainability as well, particularly in this case as regards housing and settlement. Okay. Then another course would be informal settlements upgrading, which speaks for itself. And some of the people who teach that course are amongst the foremost researchers and teachers and, let me call them assistants to policymaking in the country. So one of the people who teaches at a B3 rated researcher in terms of NREF ratings, which is pretty high, means that she has international acclaim, as it was probably the wrong word, but right, so there's a lot of stuff about the informal settlement upgrading. And then we have a theory course as well, which will be theory, concepts, and policy, which looks at the whole sweep of theory pertaining to housing and settlement. And let me just say as a general thing as well, we look not only at policy, but also programs and projects. So if you look at this course, for example, we're looking at theory, but it's not ivory tower stuff, where it's just a couple of readings, and as you said this, and you said, you know, and that's the end of it. It's not at all. We need to do that. This, for one, prides itself on having a very strong theoretical base. Okay, so we like to be up on theory, and we like people to do courses or students to really know what's out there in the literature so that you're not missing a whole lot of issues, right? And part of the idea is also to contest and debate those. So there's not one framework that we necessarily employ and say everyone must read it. Debate, different perspectives, etc. are encouraged. Okay, so all that theory which forms a solid base and a platform is taken into the realm of practice, where we look at projects and programs. So you can get into details and resonate with theory, check what's going on, look at case studies, etc., etc. Okay. So, again, there are many dimensions to the whole big game of housing and settlements, for example. So we will look at issues pertaining to housing, finance, and the law. And yet again, we look at a spectrum of beliefs and approaches and everything, so that there's not an idea that there's only one idea of housing. And then we look at the management of existing housing stock. And then in terms of the non-credit bearing courses, which I mentioned earlier, in our second category, these are some of these. In time, these might move towards a degree, but things take time to get stuck in terms of degrees. But this is to give you an example of issues which you may not ordinarily consider in terms of thinking about settlement power. As I mentioned, climate change, increasingly a major factor. Climate change could be a game changer. Okay, so in very general and broad terms, in South Africa at least, the eastern part, which is very broad and general, okay, is probably going to become much wetter, and essentially the western part of South Africa is probably going to become much drier. That's got enormous impacts for settlement. Okay? So we can look at climate change on its own as a standalone kind of issue, which is very complicated, of course. But what we also like to do is relate the climate issue to disaster risk management, which in turn relates to settlement. So let me give you an example of how these things could relate. If we look, you can see we'd be looking at drought, storms, and floods. So let me just look at floods very briefly. Climate change, if you, in very general terms, obviously we need to look at site-specific in-situ kind of stuff, but it could be that you happen to be dealing with a settlement in the eastern part of the country which is going to become significantly wetter. That has major impacts for settlement. Right? You could be susceptible to floods where once you were, because of climate change, increasing precipitation, etc., your settlement in the area could be completely susceptible flood. Right, it's just a complete game changer, and that could be independent of climate change as well. It could be flood planning, locating on a floodplain, etc., etc. So we look at all of those kinds of issues as well, per se, but especially how they relate to towns and settlements and so on. So we don't, also because we like to look at all these levels and different spatial scales, the local, the provincial, the national, plus policy, project, program, we, in the same way, we don't only look to describe and analyze. Because we come from a school of planning, we'd like to get action-oriented as well and say, well, what are we going to do about this? Right. So this is the problem with many programs, is that they stop at the analysis. They tell you what's wrong, they tell you what the problems are, but they don't tell you what to do about it. So it's all very well to be someone employed in human settlements with you who knows what the problems are, but we want to take it further and say, what are we going to do about it? So again, I could go into enormous detail, but I won't. And so if we just look at the structural and non-structural measures. So what that means, in essence, is, for example, we're talking about floods. Structural measures would be what could you do in your settlement to mitigate the harm that might come from flooding. Bangladesh, if everybody looked at the coastline of Bangladesh, it is completely fragmented, half of it's underwater from the sea. If it's not underwater from the sea, it's underwater from the typhoon. Right. So what do the people of Bangladesh do? They employ structural mitigation measures. So one of the things they do is they build their houses on stilts, so the water can rush underneath. It's a mitigatory measure. You don't have to rebuild. People are prepared for that kind of stuff. Right. So just an aside again, I'm going to stop myself from lecturing. But if you look at disaster risk management, much of your approach for disasters is remedial. Okay, it's response kind of stuff, emergency response, which is all very well. But what we say is that we need to go much further back in the process, and we look at preparedness and mitigation. In other words, we don't wait for the disaster to strike, and then we do something and we run out with the bank or something. We try and get right ahead of the game and anticipate for this and prepare for it and make it so that we don't really need to respond because we've taken hopefully adequate mitigation. Okay. So there's an example of structural measures that one can adopt. The non-structural is things like policy. So where you would have legislation, for example, that does not permit people to locate on a floodplain. Okay. So again, I could go on. And then it gets much wider than this. So you may think, well, what's wildfire mitigation got to do with human settlements and everything? Well, actually quite a lot, because there are many instances of where settlements are located, for example, next to a forest or something, right? But we have seen, particularly in Gauteng, informal settlements, fires that spread completely rapidly, right? That may be caused, as it were, internally, let's say, housing stove or something, but also from the surrounding environment as well, lightning strike, bush, catch fire, etc., etc. So there's a lot of stuff like that. Also, it's important to see that if we're talking about disaster and hazard, it's not only the big, sexy, as it were, natural hazards, the typhoons, the earthquakes, the hurricanes, etc., the tsunamis. It's also about human-induced hazards. So we have technological disasters. Okay. Theft increasing, that could also be related to climate change. For example, it is possible, I'm not saying it's probable, it's possible that Gauteng, or let's call it Joburg anyway, in Pretoria, might become a malaria area. Why? Because of the warming climate. And you've got a whole new set of issues to deal with. That could spread rapidly in very dense settlements, for example. Okay, and so we could go on. Landslide mitigation, I'm sure you've heard of, all heard of landslides, a couple of them have been in the news lately, but let me give you a different spin on landslides, is that landslides are not always a natural phenomenon. There is a case in the disaster literature where a good couple of hundred of people in the Philippines, in Manila, were killed by a landslide, but actually it was a landslide from a garbage dump. Okay? So, you can see it's part of the human settlement issue. Where were poor people living? Poor people were living next to a massive garbage dump. It's an environmental justice issue as well. That garbage dump collapsed. It actually amounted to what the same thing as a natural landslide, and a whole bunch of people were killed. Right, so I mean, I could go into a lot of detail, but I think I make the point that we're seeing this in a very wide sense and very holistic. Right, so that's kind of what we offer, what we do, how we see things very holistically. Lots of theory, lots of practice. So we try and round people off, or have them well rounded, as you said. And then in terms of who are we and what we do, I'll just give you, I'm not going to go through everybody's CV, I think that's a bit boring, but I'll just summarize and have some of the main points over here. We're all highly experienced. Some people have over 40 years of experience. I think the probably the least experience is about 10 years. Okay, practically and academically. So this is not ivory tower stuff. It's about everybody I know has worked out there or is currently working out there. So some staff are what's called 80% staff. So they do a lot of consulting. And indeed, they've done a lot of training. Training of trainers, training for nurses, etc., helping to create courses and everything. So we like to think we're at the cutting edge of all this kind of stuff. And we're not ivory tower kind of thing. I think the whole issue, the whole department obtaining music is very action-oriented to begin with. Right. Okay, and also a whole bunch of local and international qualifications. So that again gives us both local perspectives and international perspectives. So I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with South African degrees, but just to give you an idea, so we've got UCT with Pretoria, we've got the PhDs from Italy, from the UK, from USA, Sweden, we've got some Fulbright scholars, from the NRFBG Radio Researcher, we've got someone who's nominated a couple of times for the Vice Chancellor Teaching Award, we've got master's degrees from South Africa, Russell Brooks, Egypt, and vast amount of experience. So this, we have obviously got experience in some Africa, but also in other countries. So again, what we can do is marry the international and the local. I think there are two mistakes that people can make with the international stuff. The one is to think that because it's international, it's fantastic and we should just import it. The other is to think because it's international, it's not applicable here, so forget about it. So I think that's the way to look at each case on it. Okay, so there's a smattering of countries that people have worked in or taught in or whatever. So you can see there's a very wide range. The north and the south, if you like that terminology. Numerous countries in southern and eastern Africa as well. So my point is that there's a lot of cross-pollinated academic and practical experience. Okay. So there we have what we offer, how we think about it, what the approach is, do we feel qualified to do this kind of stuff, what are our credentials, but then that can all fall down if you have poor logistics, okay? But what we have at BIS is an institution called BIS Enterprise, which is a dedicated entity, it's also called a professional development hub. That is a separate entity, it's obviously related to it, a separate building, a separate location, separate staff, everything, who specialize in bringing these courses to fruition and dealing with all of the logistics. So they would do marketing, registration, food, teas, etc., do the venues, and everything, so that's all taken care of. So we don't have those logistical kind of problems. I can stop there. I'll see some of you have a detail sheet. That was the live version. If you would like to talk about anything in more detail, we can go to the other version. But I think I'd rather prefer to keep it short and sweet, and hopefully you have an idea of the kind of issues and what we're about and what we do. Don't you? Are you fine with that? I can go on if you want your money's worth.
Thank you very much, Mr. Koshoff. You can switch off now. And you can now change from your lecturing host to filling it out. That was the presentation from Zed. I'm glad that he decided to go to the light version. If we went to the heavy version, we would still be taking notes and thinking that we are already in the lecture. Yeah. Any questions or clarity? Remember, we still have to get to the two more universities and then do a sense of comparison. Yes, I'm going to
share with you. Thank you, Chairperson. My question is on slide, this is on page 12, dealing with the basic causes, participation, community development. You mentioned the requirement, as a minimum two-year course. Social experience and human settlement, but it did not indicate would the course take how long.
Before you respond, let's just see if there's any other clarities, then you can take them on. Honorable Baker, I'm not forcing for clarities. Remember, there's other presentations coming. Please. Honorable Baker, Honorable Bam, and Honorable Papa. Very short, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Worship, something with regard to town planning, bearing in mind that we're looking towards establishing these whole communities with everything in it, where would that fall in under, is there anything in the short courses, or do you have to do the full town planning course?
No, don't respond. You're taking notes, Mr. Worship. Now this time it's me who's lecturing you. So you will respond to all the questions there. What is everybody? The question was anything to do with town planning, seeing that so it's embedded in some of the short courses here. Or what happened? Honorable Pam?
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe I'm lost. I thought that I would we would hear of the course content and the duration and applicability.
You are lost, but because those details will be given to you once you decide that you do the course. But yeah, we understand what you are trying to say. Because as well, you came a bit late. That's why. So when you come in, you thank you very much. Course content and the duration. That's what Honorable Pam is asking. Honorable Papa.
Thank you. Just briefly on the relation between your innovations, how you link them with the prescribed standards in the house and construction. Thank you.
Innovations, Mr. Koshoff, you are an architect, you know, these members know what they are talking about. And maybe once you respond to them, one of the things that you could indicate in some of the courses that you have outlined, which one, because as South Africa is and the world is moving towards urbanization and urban migration is becoming a big issue. Mm-hmm. And in your courses that you have outlined, which one would be dealing with that in particular? That's as rural development. Because as urban migration is taking over, we also would want to sustain rural development as well. If we can get that in your courses, which one would be dealing with that? And maybe when you finish, you could then explain, because these are adults, they wouldn't be addressed all the time. So in terms of adult education, in terms of how you structure the courses to fit them, just briefly, so that we know. Thank you very much. Over to you, Mr.
Okay, the participation, I don't teach this. I'm not exactly sure. It's got three blocks. In terms of town planning, obviously we run a BSc undergrad town planning course, 3+1. So a lot of town planning principles will be embedded in it. So particularly if you look at housing theory, concepts and everything, there will be a lot of planning stuff in that. Also with Spuma now, we'll be looking to employ and look at those kind of things as well. So I'm not going to tell you that it's a town planning course per se, but there's a lot of town planning that is necessary to understand the housing. Okay, the courses are generally run in blocks, about 4 to 5. It varies for every course or anything, but in general it's a block of about 5 days. Sometimes that can be 3+2. For the credit bearing courses, bear in mind that we have students, master students, who undertake those courses, right? So we have a timetable where those courses are offered during various times of year so that our master students can do them. And then, of course, anyone who qualifies in terms of the criteria can join those courses as well. But for the courses which are non-credit bearing, which all those ones are put in blue, for example, climate change, disaster risk management, etc., those are ad hoc. So those will be run when we have demand. So this enterprise would advertise those courses on our behalf, go out to all sorts of stakeholders, municipalities, etc., and advertise generally. We get sufficient people, our minimum is 10 per course, our maximum is 25. We get sufficient people, we'll run the course. So if you wanted to do one of those courses, climate change, disaster, next year, those courses are currently being approved with INVIT, right? So that there is, I should have mentioned that, there is an approval process with INVIT obviously the master's courses are accredited anyway, right? But we don't just throw out any old course. It goes to the academic planning office in Vic and goes to heads of schools for approval and everything. So you can be sure that any of these non-credit bearing courses will have been approved by Vic and meeting certain standards and criteria. So it's not that we suddenly make up something and dish it out, right? So there is approval for that. So those courses, again, often 2 days, a break, do some assignments, homework and everything, come back for another 3 days. So those are not a lot of those courses. Sorry, I didn't quite understand the question about innovation and disruption.
I was asking how you link your innovations with the required or prescribed standards.
Prescribed standards of what?
Only construction.
Yeah, now that kind of stuff would come into it.
Okay.
Yeah. Urbanization? Yeah. That, again, threads through all the courses. So if you look at informal settlements upgrading, there will be a lot of theory about urbanization, what's going on, what are the trends, what's good, what's bad, etc., etc., etc. Within that context of urbanization, looking at things like informal settlements upgrading, the various approaches, starting from philosophical approaches to right down on the ground. So some of the people who will be teaching these courses, I don't teach the housing courses, except for sustainability, but some of those people who teach the courses have been consultants or still are, and have actually done upgrading programs, a housing strategy for inner city stuff, etc., etc. So you're dealing with people who know the theory, but who have also literally embarked on those kind of things in terms of having done consulting or plans or upgrading or whatever. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Mr. Postofak. That was the University of Bethlehem Rand. Block courses mainly, for those courses that are mainly in blue, on demand, those that you would want to do towards the degree, obviously it would be the same as any other student, but obviously they would look at your needs. Urbanization is integrated in almost everything that is being done in this section. Thank you very much, sir. Can we then get to the second university to come through? No, that's not up to me. The checking out depends on Mr. McLean and Mr. Boyce. I just facilitate here. So, but as the other university comes in to set up, obviously we're not going to be getting all the answers. You can interact with Mr. Boshoff even on one-on-one basis, because now we are going to run out of time. Yes, that's right. Okay, can we have the second university coming in? Yeah, Boshoff, yeah.
I just find that this is the old and the old. I just find that this is the old. Yeah, no, but I'm going to be good at bona go nna kwa go tsaya ya ya bona ke tsoba re nna re go control yo bana abantu ke le tsaya ba tsiga ba tsini ke go nna le re 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 okay
Mr. Khosra, please, would we hand it over back to Mr. Brendan Boyce and Mr. Nassim.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, much appreciated. We, as Madam Chair pointed out, have three universities that are coming to present. This was West University. What we will need to do as soon as Dr. Boshoff leaves is to look at his program in relation to the needs of the committee and whether it does respond to what the committee wants. Dr. Boshoff is now leaving this meeting to a task team which is represented by metros, the nine provinces, as well as the national department. He will be addressing the practitioners that are responsible for capacity development in the sector. And those practitioners will determine whether the programs that he and other universities are presenting are relevant and can be used by the sector or officials or practitioners at various levels. In terms of what the committee, we're very specific about what the committee wants. The committee is the political leadership of human settlements. An intervention program that comes to the committee must be a leadership program that speaks to areas of expertise in the leadership and human settlement. What we are looking for is leadership in human settlement. Mr. Boshoff presented, a lot of what he presented speaks to the hardcore of human settlement. And we will need to look at what it is that the committee wants. So in our thinking, in our assessment, the leadership plays a critical role in terms of what the committee wants. So I'll ask Mr. Brendan Boyce to speak to his response even before the committee talks to what it is, whether there's a response to the needs of the committee. His response in terms of where the committee is situated, the context of what the committee wants. It is very, very important, honorable members, that when the 5 years ends, the committee members must each have an accredited program, a certificated program, which we can use as something to fall back on for whatever. But we are speaking for us, we do not promote anything that is not accredited. If we want to attend programs that are not accredited, it is then because we want to just understand, but it is very, very important that whatever it is that we do, it must be credible. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Chief. I just want you to say that at the vision of professional projects is really to make sure that capacity, sustainable capacity, transferable capacity exists at all levels of our system, our housing management system. At your level, we're dealing with the strategic dimension of decision making. We're talking about people who ask questions about the root causes, about what is going well or what is going wrong with the housing settlement sector. So you are not operating at a technical or technocratic level, although having some grasp of the technocratic issues is essential.
Good morning.
Which university?
University of Victoria.
Okay.
I'm from Roman Zavala, just speaking the same language. I have a thought.
You lived up to Syria and among the band to speak the same language?
Yes.
Okay.
We are on the same, let's say, the same topic.
Today, oh, anyway,
today.
Not always. I have a PowerPoint.
Okay.
I don't know.
Can you lift up the capacity? Probably, Mr. Boy, you will clarify.
Yes.
Okay. Because my understanding is that right now, after its university offers Stellenbosch that is coming in.
Oh.
Okay.
Yes. Actually, we're only scheduled for 12.
Yes.
But we want to straight in.
Sorry, if you could just...
Okay, so we're not that yet.
Yes.
Okay, that's fine, thank you.
Yeah.
Give us a moment.
Yeah. With people, you can go with people's water. Mangaman.
Yeah. Sorry, can I just ask? I see that some of my handouts have been circulated.
No, it's fine. It's fine. Your handouts are circulated to the members. Yeah, thank you very much. University of Pretoria, please don't stop the meeting. Yes, University of Pretoria, wait outside. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you to Samiso for
making the
coffee.
Yeah. He doesn't want to leave.
See you in the point.
I'll be quick.
I thought I had time to view. To reflect on the previous presentation and try and take us forward in a constructive manner, in a way that gives you as the chair something to operationalize into a training program. Because I think we want to get to the point where we can actually make a selection of who is more appropriate for this level. So the point I wanted to make is that, Mr. McLean had asked me to, is that the strength of the VITS program is really around technocratic planning and high-level theory, and also the integration of theory and praxis. So they are very strong on theory, and they also have people that operate in metros, that have been in NGOs, that have a cross-section of experience. So they're able to bridge the gap. So that's a huge strength that VITS brings. The other issue that did not come out clearly in the program or the presentation is that VITS is a very strong social consciousness around doing projects from the university side as an implementing agent, which is very unique. And then also they have a very strong recognition of prior learning. So although it didn't come out strongly, but in their brochures, they are able to allow those courses, so if you have some experience in housing practice between 3 to 5 years, and if it's evidence-based, you can submit a portfolio of evidence, and then you can then choose to put together those master's courses. And you can then, if you achieve 60%, so he didn't talk to the criteria, but I'll talk to it quickly. If you achieve 60% academic mark, and you completed the assignments up to the level required, you can then exit each module with credits, which then can lead into a postgraduate diploma if you don't want to do the dissertation, and if you want to do the dissertation, you can exit with a master's. That would be over a 3 to 3.5 year period. The lowest benchmark would be that you'd exit with a certificate from VITS, which is well recognized, and which would be competency assessed. So they are good deliverables, and in terms of the price, they are very reasonable. We can talk about, they must, each university has to present a financial proposal to the chair, and it has to actually also be cost effective for this committee to be able to engage upon that training. Thank you, Mr. Boyton. I love the fact that you say you can exit it at any level, at a certificate level, at a diploma level, at a degree level, and at a master's level, which then is talks well to people of different developmental stages and ages in the communities. I think that's something we will put at the back of our minds as we listen to other universities, so that when we compare. I also love the fact that, they also, more than anything else, I think because VITS has been doing this for some time, they have come to adapt in terms of the needs and the schedule of people like ourselves in terms of how to structure the courses themselves. And therefore there's always that flexibility around them in terms of that. But as you say, we will always be listening to in terms of this fee structure and everything else, but which doesn't bother us much because we know this, at this time around it doesn't come from our pockets. At least the only thing is the commitment from members to make sure that they complete the course. That's what is very critical for us. And it must be a course that everybody is comfortable with, and that everyone chooses a course that they think that it will actually add value to them, or rather than just doing a course because somebody else is doing that course. I think it's going to be very critical that we all look at what is going to add value to an individual within the human settlement, rather than doing a course, because it's going to be a bit useless for somebody like, for example, myself, who would want to do a small technocratic kind of course degree when I know that my strong point is more community-oriented. I'm just making an example. So those are the kind of things that we will look at. But thank you very much. And thank you for that summary, because I think it assists. It assists, and obviously, in terms of negotiations and interfacing with the universities themselves, you will be there to assist us when the time arrives in terms of what needs to happen. But one of the things that we have committed ourselves to is that this needs to happen as early as the beginning of 2015. Yeah, thank you very much. I think we have the next university with us, which is University of Stellenbosch. I don't know if they're going to be connecting. You going to connect? As they connect, I'm sure. Can you bring your computer, Swazi?
Thank you. Research and the international exchanges is where this course fits in the sense of that it draws from all these streams, but I must say that it's the first element of a stepping stone of a larger course. What is important about this course is that it's a foundational and a short course. Although it's a program, this is the first stepping stone into a broader program, because to establish a program at honors level and then to more at master level takes some time, subsidies and so on and so forth. So we're establishing this from existing courses. So this course has already been accredited, that we're talking about, it's already been accredited by Stellenbosch University at honors level, and we are saying that it is a 12 credit SACO level 9 course. So it's already taking you straight into into the graduate level and to the postgraduate level. I'm going to skip a slide and come back, but this is a picture that you have to see. This is respect to the way normal academic programs work. The one that's what the taxpayers pay. Just to say is that there are different ways of accessing universities as we all know and accessing courses. The one is a formal kind of course where you go in as a first year student, then the second year student, the third year, then the honors, then it's master's, then it's your doctorate. Now, for people who are working, we need other kinds of ways into the system. And what we are calling is something called by the universities, you can see on the right hand corner. And these allow you into various stages of development into what we call a work-based diagonal qualification route. So if I'm going to stand and demonstrate this,
you can from here, is that you notice that this is an undergrad first year of public administration course. That coincides with the diploma in public accountability. So instructive course. Yeah. Then at the second year you can do a diploma in public. I've only used this because we're still developing the housing course, okay? So you can move from, like an elevator, from there, from the first year to the second year, but not do the full-time route for a student. So you move from there to there, get into the advanced diploma, so this is almost year one, year two, year three, and then you get into the honors level, which this course is part, the module is born from that. In the long term, what we want to do is to establish postgraduate diploma in human settlement development, and we're saying that this course is the first one, is the first module in this. And we could also establish through this. So if you want to put together your postgraduate diploma in human settlement, you can do the whole range of short courses available from the university, financial management, project management, whatever the case is, in order to build this up. So in short, we are not creating a course that is de novo. What we are saying is that the existing material, and we can work with the existing material to develop a course, but packaged to the capabilities and competencies of the department and of the officials and of the politicians. That's what we are saying. So we're not saying there's a standard product and take it and that's it and our job is done. We are saying something different. Okay, this, I think you have this presentation. I'm just going to talk very quickly through it. The structure of the presentation is as follows. First, I must start by saying that the government's delivery of housing has been recognized by the United Nations Commission as being one of the most significant in the history of humanity. Insofar as
people might criticize us and say, we have delivered more homes since from the Greek civilization onwards. So that is truly a remarkable achievement for this of the South African government. Secondly, that if you look at the figures, is that in South Africa delivered in 5 years 750,000 houses. Sweden did that, only delivered 1 million in 10 years. Singapore delivered 585,000 in 26 years. You can see our rate is actually phenomenal in terms of what we're doing, and our rate continues to be phenomenal. And for given our level of development and our budget, we are doing extremely well. Regardless of the circumstance and how strong or weak the public service is, we are performing exceptionally well. I just want to quote Mr. Sisulu. She says that almost a decade later, Mr. Sisulu produced a similar result in 1998 to 2008. And she says, when I took over as the Minister of Housing in 2000, the government had produced 1.6 million homes. Today, 4 years later, 2014, we have produced 2.6 million homes. And that means that accommodation for 13 million people. Our rate of building and our rate of delivery in 2010, the banking sector said that we're only second to China. So notwithstanding the criticism of the state and how fast or slow it delivers, we are phenomenal with respect to what is happening in the world. Obviously, there are problems. So since 1994, there have been, of course, there have been concerns about poor, there's been concerns about poor standards, poor quality, etc., and so forth. But essentially, we are locked. For us to move forward, we need to break what is called part dependency. And that is, we are hostages to decisions of the past. We are hostages to an urban regime that has the bankers, the private, the big property developers, the insurance companies, etc., in the pound seat. And the problem is that the way this we want to deliver housing in a toxic environment. It's almost trying to say that you want to cure somebody with TB, but the person lives in the slum, and you give them the drugs, and therefore the person might never recover. And so the issue is how then to break this part dependency, and some of the things that stop us from moving forward and intensifying the housing drive relates to the spatial structure, our inability to get around exclusively market forces, and also our inability to integrate planning, training, transport, so on, function, growth. But other things which also prevent, so what is required then, sorry, my apologies, what is required then is for us to remodel, recondition, and reorientate this development regime. But we must be mindful of the dislocations of land, property, and financial markets, and the workings of those, right, which many housing courses don't teach people about. Secondly, we need to be concerned about things like urbanization and the wider spatial economy and what is happening in this economy, decentralization, so on, suburbanization, etc. And lastly, we must come to terms with that we are all both friends and foe of the poor, in the sense our reconstruction project swings both ways. Now, this is taken from the Presidential Evaluation Unit analysis, and they said what is needed and required with respect to any future training program is the following. First, we need to redirect, discipline, direct, and target both public and private sector investments. That's the first thing. So we also need to consider our own investment and how we work there. We need to improve intergovernmental relations. We need to revamp the subsidy instruments and vehicles. The recent Minister's statement about people under 40 should not get homes is, on the other hand, an indication that there's going to be acceleration of perhaps rental and social housing. And these are the kind of instruments that need to be revamped. We need to nurture different types of support, delivery regimes, improve the strong civil society, strong state goes together and work at it. And also we need to reframe sustainability. And by this I mean is that housing should not be seen as an expense and on a negative side of society, of the state's balance sheet. It should be seen on the positive side, as supporting libraries and so on and so forth. Now, I'm going to skip the side about how we can work. towards changing this, and I wanted to just mention some examples from other countries, but I think maybe we will just move on quickly. What I do want to say is that what are this course objectives? Now, this course, as I said, is the first, the pilot course of a larger program. And what this thing tries to do, first of all, is to introduce participants to new thinking around housing, particularly post-financial crisis, particularly what is happening in Latin America and Brazil and Venezuela, for example. Brazil and Venezuela, for instance, have the largest housing drives in the world right now. And part of it was by taking money away from oil and things and revenue and pumping it back and giving it back to society. I mean, Marikana is an example where partly that failed. And those resources could have been used in quite creative ways. Okay, but this is an example about mineral rents. So we need to think about new ways and experiences to practically arm us to engage with these new realities, the disjunctures in the land, property, financial market, the changes in urbanization patterns, and the way the private sector responds. Secondly, what this course aims to do is to build a strong, principled, committed, professional community. This is the emphasis, a professional community of housing officials, researchers, and scholars. Over the past 10 years or so, is that this community has fallen apart. And hence, some of the times that some of our best allies make the most scathing critiques of us based on not understanding what the policy is, etc., but the scholarship and this community has now fallen apart, broken apart. And there's a need to use a kind of professional thing to bring these people together. So what are the learning outcomes? Some of the learning outcomes, you say, is include want to enhance the capabilities for people to discourse with the private sector, for instance. What frustrates pro-poor development? And some of it is often the way property developers speak to our housing officials. And they dazzle them with nonsense. And they're not able to engage the private sector, banks, etc., and so forth along this. Secondly, is the notion of what we want to do is conceptualize and use a whole range of examples from elsewhere to rebuild and rethink human settlement development, which is way beyond BMG right now. BMG looks positively like a dinosaur right now compared to what is helping it also. And thirdly, we want to think and do developmentalism differently. Now, to get out to the nitty-gritty of this course has got 10 themes. Okay? Now, this first course is an introduction to all these themes. It's just an introduction course. Some of you will be looking at what has been the relationship in the state market. Remember that this is a course related in policy and practice. It's not so much a course related to technical issues and project management, etc., which we are saying can be complemented with other courses of the university. But this is more policy needs. Second one is to look at how welfare regimes have changed over time. You know, the movement now, for instance, from individual freehold now to, for example, social housing. And that has been an informal upgrading, etc. Third one is to look at what prevents us from changing. What are the constraints standing in the way with respect to political economy? The fourth one is to say, so what is this new developmentalism that's emerging in the world, and etc., etc., and we can find. So all of these then can form, and depending on how we group them, can form the basis for a next step, a next pilot, or a next course. So we're hoping that by putting together the different themes, then we can have different courses. So, for example, we could have one course dedicated completely to land infrastructure and services, or one relating to how the financial property and land markets work, and what is it about the township economies, for example, what makes them unique, and how the property sector operates in township markets and economies. So the course is meant as an introduction and appreciation of the variety of pathways and strategies for inclusive human settlement development, and it's about a multiple and flexible channel of pathways to learn and grow. So it means you can incrementally, and I showed with those elevators, you can increment and accumulate professional qualifications. And you can build solid and durable networks of practice and so forth in order to establish that professional community that we spoke about in the beginning. But the idea that is to climb up the ladder, but in an incremental way, in a flexible way which suits people. The course, just to break down the course very quickly, the course consists of four parts. One is reading and self-managed time. The second one is 40 hours of classroom work and a submission of a short written assignment. The third is a practical group project, which we're hoping that people can do in a job. A week of training, then you have a practical project that you work upon. But the idea is to bring in officials and I don't know what to put them on the learning system, but bring in officials from different areas to talk about particular projects that might be on the list or not on the list. And then an individual written assignment. I'm not, if you want me, I can go through this part, but you have the presentation, so you can see assessment and evaluation on the next page, how it's broken out.
No, we don't want you to go there.
Okay. I want to just say very quickly on the specialization, then this is what we want to say. Is that this course brings together five professors, a doctor, two senior personnel from NGOs, one domestic and one international, an urban development planning strategist, and two project managers with expertise in human settlement development consolidation. But I also want to mention that one of them is also the originator of participatory budgeting in Brazil, and which is now throughout the world. So the expertise that we bring together are the following, and I'm going to run through this quickly. First, we have urban and regional planning. That's one kind of central expertise among this competency. There's architecture, engineering, construction, legal, financial, and town planning. We have people experts in social housing, rental housing, informal upgrade, people dealing with human rights and anthropology and survival strategies, community development workers and organization. I mentioned one being the founder of Brazil's participatory budgeting project, and people in public administration and public management, special concentration on systems, and also anti-corruption. The next few pages are the professional and credentials, which you can have a look at your own. And I just want to say, maybe the standard fee for delegates is 9,000 for this course. This includes venue hire, meals, refreshments, and so on, but does not include the cost of travel and accommodation for presenters from outside the Western Cape. And by my last calculation, we had one international person and two from Gauteng. So we're not looking at most of the presenters are from here. So we can negotiate with the department. And this is the very last slide, and I thank you again for your patience. Is that this is a demand-driven and co-designed with the department and the presidency. This is not something again. We spent hours in negotiation with the department working out precisely what to cater to their needs. It brings together a variety of people who are contributing to government and who have solid experience in the sector. And lastly, I mean, the best part is that we are Cape Town based. And so it's easy enough to fly all over the journey and come to Stellenbosch and have a really nice time.
Thank you, Mr. Khan. You really have done a very good marketing of your course. We really appreciate them. You do know that we have three universities that are presented to us. So you are the second one. And we really appreciate it. And we also like the fact that the course was designed in conjunction with the department and the presidency.
Mr. McLean,
wants to say something?
If you can speak to Rebel Bishop prior to the
Yes, the issue of the entry, the lateral entry into the university, is that if one takes up a short course or goes the diploma route, is a recognition of that prior learning, in the sense of the admission requirements for that, and you can get on. So it's not a formal requirement for the university where you've got to have a matric, etc., and then get into the formal kind of route, but here it's a lateral entry, so there is a recognition. There are some performance requirements related to that, but that's in the techniques and the specifics.
Thank you very, very much. The department is going to talk to us more in detail about what you're offering, and then we will communicate. Yes. Thank you very much. As Mr. Boyce will be doing the summary for us as we are waiting for the next visit, which always helps Mr. Boyce. That analysis always assists us.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Committee, for your attention for the last presentation. I think the presentation really speaks for itself. It's really targeted at the political executive level. It is looking at an overview, and it is also looking at alternative paradigms, creating a holistic perspective, but then going into sub-themes, which I won't go into in detail. So, I don't need to really say more. I think the guys presented.
No, but also, Mr. Boyce, while we're waiting for the University of the State, I think because for you, remember, in your comparison up to now, between Red and Stellenbosch, that's your objective analysis.
Yes.
Can you do that for us?
Okay. I think the issue I want you to say, when you deal with university, you deal with the top 10. And I've been trying to deal with the top 10, eh? So that we bring prestige, we also make sure that you are participating at the highest level, and there's a lot of credibility. So that the last two universities are in the top 5 of this country, right? Wits and Stellenbosch. So that is, we are already talking about cream, right? We're already talking about a very high standard. And then all of these universities have international accreditation, and then also you can see that they both have a lot of strong relationships with government going all the way to the presidency. But they are operating in different markets. The planning school is more praxis, and you could hear what Brian was saying. Brian was saying we look at policy, we look at evidence, and then we want to experiment with a plan. So he's more focused at the program or project level, which is also, so Brian is looking at executive managers and project managers. But the program that Dr. Khan has presented is looking at the strategic level to get people to think outside of the box and to ask questions that are coming from alternative paradigms, to compare those paradigms, and then to say how do we engage in a high-level critic debate, which is actually what we need.
Mr. Boyce, in your own way, why are you waiting for another university? Honestly, that is actually more designed for officials.
Correct.
If we could agree.
Yes.
And so far, Stellenbosch is more designed for politicians.
Yes.
Can we agree on that?
Leadership level.
Yes. Yeah. Can we? That's in what they have presented.
Yes.
We can see that Red is more technocratic.
Correct.
It's more about those that are doing the work on a daily basis, while Stellenbosch is trying to be more strategic in approach.
Absolutely.
That's what,
supported.
Yes, okay. But also, one thing that I wanted to find out, just once we are waiting for who's coming, Free State.
Yeah.
Once you are waiting for Free State to come, I was asking Koliswa, one of my interests in these universities, why is Nelson Mandela University not part of the ones that we have invited? I'll ask you why. Because there's always been this thing that there's a degree of human sentiment that they have also put in place together with the department. Here in Stellenbosch, trying to tell us that this has been done in conjunction with the department. Why was Nelson Mandela not invited?
Quickly. The NMMU B degree is looking at the lowest entry. So we're looking at youth, young people who are when they dream their career choices, they say, as I was saying, the state is a place that I can contribute, and I'm going to be more in a multidisciplinary education. So it's very basic. And it's a mix of technocratic courses. So you have GIS, Financial Management, Politics 101. So the level is, for you, very basic. You'll be bored.
I'm asking you so that at least all of us understand.
Yes, I'm coming to you.
NMU is mainly for an 18-year-old who has just passed matric, who wants to go into a human settlement level, but with still a cognitive development level.
Absolutely.
I understand what you are meaning.
Yes.
No. You don't have to explain yourself. I think we are at the same level. And remember, here we are looking at courses that would mean more to adult education in terms of people who know what they want, in terms of people who actually understand but they actually need a recognition. That's all. So that's the difference. Where is the University of the State?
It's for people who have been doing the job for years. Where are the applications for?
No, unfortunately, they still have to talk to me as the chair, and we have to say, we must finish. Where is
the compromise in the
world? No, they are outside. Can we get some insight? Yes. You know, she's behaving like somebody who's busy with it and she knows already who's the candidate. That is given as a present. from the University of Western States and Center for Development Support. Our program is with Business School and the Central University of Technology. So I'm standing in today for Ansi Barnard, who is the marketing person and who this course is actually based, because it's based in the business school. And I'm a short course coordinator at the Center for Development Support. Thank you very much for this opportunity. We firstly have been approached by National, as Dr. Boyson is saying, to put together this program. For now, I will firstly introduce our history with human settlements, and then I will move towards how we are trying to professionalize our short programs into a certificate. And the white boxes you see, as Mama has put it correctly, is USBs. Within that, we have this presentation, and we have also more details into the outline of the courses, so what each theme or module comprises of. I won't be going into details here in my presentation, but you'll find it in there, and also have an institutional CV for Center for Development Support, and some more information regarding what is happening at the business school. So thank you very much. Okay, as I was saying, we have had as CBS short learning programs for human settlements that we started in 2001, and mostly we have been presenting them to the Sioux State and to the Northern Cape, and they have always been workplace relevant, even to a point of having an analysis of what these provinces need. And then we thought within those provinces, then we would put together short courses. And the courses that we had, some of them did have credits, but the credits were towards RTL, and some universities would take those RTL and some would not. So in most of the cases, they were not. So we are grateful that we have an opportunity now to have at least one certificate that would be able to make a person be able to move on to a more concrete degree. Some of the courses that we have had include that development and operational plans for housing, housing policy and practice, PHP, social housing, and the longest that we had was the settlement housing and settlement policy development program, which ran over 2 weeks. That was the longest that we had. And but now we are going through with the university to re-accredit these courses, as the university is also requiring us now to be more professional, that a person does not only have a certificate, but they definitely have to have something to move on to a following course. So we have, as a university, also with our short learning programs, to make sure that they move on to a certain course. You can't just have a short learning program anymore. So now, after having been called by the department, for financial to put together a program, we partnered with the business school at the University of the Free State, and we partnered with Central University of Technology. And our course is mostly, which is the management development program, is mostly from the business school. They will be the ones who are managing it. They will be the ones who are putting everything together, and I will show you how that will be done. And the Central University of Technology is more looking into the technical aspect of human settlement. And it's people that we have worked with before, but privately, not at Central University of Technology, but now they've moved on to Central University. And how does this customization work? The program, the management program that is existing with business school, is an existing program. But within that program, they are now allowed to change 49% and customize it for the client. And in this case, it's human settlement. And then with that in mind, we are then able to design programs for the client and customize it accordingly and replace, put in the industry-specific modules and make sure that they are industry or company-specific. learners as well will also go the same way. And how are we putting together the short course? The learners are going to do action learning. They will go into class, but they will also be able to go out there, do practicals, and do whatever is applicable to the workplace. And we will customize, as I've already said, and they will also have group activities and discussions, and within the presentation they will have case studies. The course content, as I have mentioned, I did not go into details of what are the outcomes and the outlines. You will find that in the USB. But the first 8 of the 16 modules are leadership and management related, looking into governance and ethics and the basics of how to write an assignment and to be relevant at a university level, and also general management and the Financial Management Act that is relevant to public sector. Project management that is relevant to human settlement. So even within the existing programs, so we'll try to make it as human settlement as possible. And then we have 8 that are more human settlement specific, and those will look into the programs, the policies, the plans, and then the technical aspects of things, and also the sustainability of things and urbanization and sustainability, informal settlement upgrading. I know that the national wanted that program very much within the within our course, so the informal settlement program will be included, and it will also look into international ways, how do the international people deal with it, what is the framework there. And we also have places like Khanya helping us with community-based planning, so being able to work with people. With the credentials of the presenters, I didn't put specific names of people either, but we will take lecturers from the 3 institutions, and we'll also get specialists. We have been working over the years with specialists in human settlement, and they will be included in the courses again. And I can guarantee you that we have a person like Professor Lochna Mare, who is very much versed in human settlement issues and policy and in practice. And he has a lot of accredited journal articles that are looking into issues into different provinces in South Africa. He has worked very hard on that. Our program is a formal higher certificate, and I was listening to Dr. Khan's presentation. I saw that their entry level is level 9. Ours is a little bit lower. It's N2F level 5. And it has already been accredited by SAFA, and it has 136 credits. And as I was saying, it has to be credit-bearing towards the next qualification, and in this case, that qualification would be a bachelor's degree in management and leadership. We are still going to go into negotiations with Nelson Mandela Metro University and look into partnering with them and having people move on to their degree of human settlement. And how is the articulation and cost? The course takes about 28 days over a year, and within that the presentations will be in blocks, for example a week, and then a person will be able to go back and work within their work environment and make it applicable there. And then we are open to presenting it wherever the client wants us to go, so they don't have to go to the University of the Free State, we can go to them. But for a person to qualify, they need to at least have 80% attendance. And our assessments are assignments and open book examinations. The cost for a group of 20 people, the cost would be around 28,000, but that cost excludes traveling and meals and things, and venue if the venue is different from the university. Okay, yeah, that's it. much, Ms. Pani. Thank you, Paya. Any clarity from the committee members so that we then can have the summary from any clarity? How, Mr. Horan?
No, I was asking Mr. Kapo, what do you want more?
Then, Mr. Mganatawa?
If you say you can assemble where the participants are, you are looking at what number to form a lecture class.
It's a minimum of 20. Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Khani. I don't know if there's any other questions from the officials. Otherwise, we will release you. Thank you very much for your time, Ms. Khani. And then what we will be doing then, we will be having a discussion with the officials, and then we will be communicating with you. As you might know, we really would want these kinds of things to start as early as next year. You know that our term of office here is 5 years. We are already on 4.5. So we are rushing. Yeah, thank you.
Can I just say, one of the questions on the other side that I thought was important, they were asking if we take maybe that minimum of 20 people and then some drop out, will we then say, no, you cannot continue with a certain module or whatever? No, it does not work like that. We are very flexible and we have people up to the end. And unfortunately, we don't have a certificate of attendance. It's only on completion. Don't get confused. As you see them coming slowly, they are presenting on the other side as well. That's where they had Mr. Khan presenting. Thank you. Thank you very much, Kolisa. Thank you for your time. As we then do our final discussion. I can tell you now, our impression is that it's a new course. They are going to be starting. They have been doing short courses with a maximum of 90 hours. So they are entering on a longer course. They will be entering with you if you choose them, which is a good thing because you will pass easily. It was a new course. That's good to see them.
Chair, you're giving me a very difficult task because you are influencing the committee already.
Can I just ask, Mr. Boyce, you indicated that you looked at the cream. Was Freestyle really ranked higher than UK Zedian?
Thank you.
No, can we let us go there? In the cream, in terms of, yeah, Mr. Boyd, don't respond.
No, I have to respond. UKZN is my alma mater and my former employer. I'm declaring a big interest.
Yeah.
And UKZN is in the ranking 2, 3. So they're definitely in the top 5. It's a good question. But the planning school has not been responsive, both to the national mandate to shift from housing to human settlements, and then they've also experienced some institutional changes. So at the level that we're talking, which is at the higher level, they still offer the masters and the degrees, but they're also facing challenges about offering the course across the country. So they want you to come to UK today. So just still a rich Mr. Baker.
Paradigm shift is taking the years.
I won't take up much of the time, but I think committee you've been given a very good menu you from the first presentation to this one, and you can see some of the emphasis is obvious. Free State is responding very well to the National Department's initiative to professionalize. They're coming with a slightly longer course. It's very much in the infancy, it's developing. Although it's got a label of leadership, it doesn't really talk in terms of the content to leadership, high-level thinking, but definitely it's adequate for management level people. So people that are entering a management level, maybe they assistant manager, assistant director or deputy director, that's somebody that you could send to this course. So it's got a lot of core competencies. You saw project management, financial management, etc. It's got a lot of content and policy based course, but it does not talk to strategy and high level engagement. So that's my assessment.
That's the point. Don't worry. We have made our decision. I know the committee members have made their decision. No. Based on the presentation that we have made. I'm not saying based on anything else. Based on what we have said, we have had, and in terms of the needs, I think we've sort of made our decision. But there is a Mr. Wall from the University of Pretoria who. No, but they can say, because they are coming to present skills development in relation to sanitation. They've been knocking on our doors. We just want them to present and hear what they are offering. Maybe they must come through as we are finalizing. And as we do that, the department and the members' facility and members' interest, I think what you can try to do now is to look at when the courses start, when the registration starts, and all those kinds of things, particularly around the University of Stellenbosch. Particularly around, I know my none of my members will say no to that. If you can just get us all the details around the University of Stellenbosch. Remember, it also talks to us and the proximity of the university and everything else. I don't know if there's anybody else who really and the accessibility. We are just being practical in every sense of the way. I think there's a sense of agreement on that one. Yes, Mr. Lavlin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. But also, I just want to highlight importantly, if there are elements in the program that the committee would like redone or respond differently, the universities are open to that. So if the committee, for instance, feels that there is a leadership element that you would want to add to the Stellenbosch program, then we could engage with the Stellenbosch program to deal with that. Thank you. Thank you.
I think me, Mr. Matthew, you and Mr. Boyce, at some point, sit down as the committee and look at other things, and then we can sit down and give you a feedback on the things that you would like them, added on that computer. But generally, we are not saying at a later stage we wouldn't want them to come and present a short course on us on certain things. You remember, these are the kind of things that we are saying right now. It sticks to what we want to do at the moment. Thank you very much. Mr. Wall, we would like you to talk to us about the skills development and job creation potential around the sanitation infrastructure. You don't have much time. You have about, I see here you were given about an hour. You have less than that.
Okay, and how long do we have?
You have about 30 minutes.
That's
Thank you. Chris Rehan has circulated a one page from me also about maintenance, because this where this started, this whole idea started, is that we at CSR, I've just retired from CSR now with the University of Victoria Potter, but the CSR did a lot of work on maintenance. Maintenance has been a big issue starting 10, 12 years ago before it was fashionable. We both the National Infrastructure Maintenance Strategy, which was approved by Cabinet, we did the National Water Services Asset Management Strategy for Water Affairs at the time, and we did two, together with the Engineers Association, we did two National Infrastructure Report Cards, and a lot of other stuff. Now, all of this is now reporting on the state of maintenance. But we see it's not supposed to be bright people who come up with new ideas. And the gist of it is that you can go to small towns in South Africa, and you can get clean petrol from the tap, from the petrol station. You don't think it's contaminated. But when you can't get clean water from the tap. Now, how bizarre is this? Clean petrol, which comes from a long way away, water from nearby, and you get one right, you can't get the other right. And a clean hamburger, but the sewage works is not working, and you can't find a clean toilet. And it's crazy. What is the institutional model? And that's the kind of idea that we then had. Once we started working on this, we realized that this, in fact, is also a major job creation potential. And in fact, as the little thing from Financial Mail said, that one pager, there's 250,000 jobs which can be created in maintenance if the budgets are down. And this is usually the biggest problem. The owners of the infrastructure have to budget for maintenance. Okay. But now to dual that is easier said than done. So that's where this idea came from. But if I get the petrol station right, what kind of models are they using? Can these be adapted from the private sector to the public sector, from commercial goods to social goods? Can they be? And we found there's certain precedents for this, but what we were trying to do in South Africa, in fact, turned out to be a pioneer in many ways. So we're not here to sell you a product. FE represents a company which happens to be the biggest kind of on the ground, but we're not here to sell Ubuntu or Manzubuntu. We have to sell you a concept which suggests that operations and maintenance, and especially maintenance of water and sanitation, but also of housing and various other things as well, is just as important as building the thing in the first place. So maintenance is so important. And getting maintenance done is always a problem, but some ways are better than others. Okay, right. So we're highlighting the skill development potential and job creation potential of maintenance. And we'll talk about the social exchange model. We now about lack of jobs, need for jobs, and especially of jobs for people at the lower end of the skills levels, entry level 1 and below, where the biggest problems are of people unable to get work. So, a lot of people out of work. So there's a need for jobs. I don't think anybody would argue with it. There's a need for infrastructure maintenance. So please, can't we create maintenance jobs? Again, how do we go about it? Prime is the key mechanism for addressing poverty. But many of the skills, you know, if you try and train people beforehand, if they're not going to apply this in a job, they're only half-trained. Workplace skills development is as important as any kind of formal training. All these things improve employability, all those kind of things, are developed on a job. So you have to have a mechanism for doing that. That's significant potential in maintenance. Well, we all heard about construction, you know, jobs created in construction. Construction is a boom and bust industry. Before the World Cup, the employment was up there in construction. 2 years later, it was halved. Maintenance needs to be done every single year. There's no booms and busts. The need on the schedule, the more infrastructure we build, the more maintenance needs to be done. A lot of it is possible using labor intensive methods. A lot can be accomplished by people with low skill levels. And people don't have to move around from construction site. In the far corners of land, there's infrastructure which needs to be maintained. Solid waste, sewers, all going to be maintained. These people need to clean or cleaning toilets. Programs need to clean as well, to just do simple maintenance of street verges and things like that. There's a lot. But ways have got to be found to make this happen. What's the mechanism? And we go back to the petrol stations and the fast food. Have they got some kind of mechanism that works, that we can get this maintenance done, if the budgets are there? I want to highlight on toilets. Toilets have been a bit of an explosive issue recently, for good reason, extremely good reason. So recently last year. Okay, so what are the problems? Why doesn't maintenance get done? Well, there's shortfalls in management, the local authority level especially. Shortage of skilled people, there's big backlogs, how much maintenance is done, and public sector infrastructure, they all say, no, we can do it, but in fact they can't. They keep doing some help from the private sector and from emergent business. So the model, the innovative model, formulated by the CSR and other Water Research Commission, heavily involved. We got funding from RSA, we got funding from Netherlands government as well to do innovative modeling. Creating partnerships for skill development and job creation. Exchange principles relating to quality control of mutual incentives. I need to explain. How it works. Locally emergent, locally based emergent micro-entrepreneurs develop trained talent. From day one, this is not a subsidy thing. If I come and work on your infrastructure, you must pay me. Get into the habit. See, too many subsidized things, the way cleverly, when the subsidy's over, thank you very much indeed for what you've done, it collapses. From day one, with this thing starting 2009, actually work on the ground. Infrastructure only, you must pay. Get into the habit of doing it, and you've got the budget. Don't tell us you haven't got the budget, you have got the budget. And previously unemployed people living in their surrounding areas, often previously unemployed, engaged in learning and paid work. Some of the people that are using, they've been employed, they've never had the job before in their middle age. The job before which actually earns them money over a longer period of time, supposed to take 3 months for the EPWP. The first big work was done, Department of Education, Eastern Cape, said 400 schools in, by the way, that's about 5,000-6,000 toilets. We've got the budget, there's the budget, sort them out. Get them back into service. Look, if they're smashed up completely, that's a different story. Can you clean them and sort them out? Okay. And this, I'm sorry to say, was not untypical of the state of the toilet. It was really, really bad. So pushing them, cleaning them up. If they fit, put the teams in most of the rural schools are in there. By the way, the pits have to be empty. There's some pits there, I've never been into this school. I'm used to this. But you know, 25 years the school has never had its toilet cleaned. 25 years, it's incredible. That's what happens. What's it achieving in schools? Supporting mentoring individuals to build and manage their own businesses, local employment, quality is happening, and improving the school environment. How can children be taught from a book about health and hygiene, but at school they can't practice it because the water is broken, there's no rainwater harvesting working, and the toilet's in the basement? How can they then take practices back home when they've been taught what they've been taught and what has happened at the school in front of them? So part of this whole thing is the education, telling the kids, right, now this has happened, this is what you do, this is what you use the toilet. Okay, right. We always wanted to do municipal work as well. And what was happening then is the municipalities around the amateur logistics municipality are saying, right, hey, this is good, come and do it for us as well. So we picked up a lot of work for the people there. And it's like your 15,000 kilometer service on your car. You can't take your toilet to a servicing agent. Like I can take my car to Honda in Victoria, in Memphis. You can't take it, but they come to you to do the 15,000 kilometer service. Your toilet or your sewage works or your solar panel on your RGB house or whatever it is. And it's the same. In between, you must still drive the car responsibly, you must still put in petrol and you must still look after the tires and all that kind of stuff. It's the same principle. In between, you must still look after the toilet. But they come and do the big clean up and the pumping out and all this kind of stuff and minor repairs. Operational plans for different types of toilets. They're now working commercially, procurement, everything was sorted out. I haven't got time to tell you about how that was done. But the same company is now doing four school districts, 1,300 schools. That's a hell of a lot of toilets. Some schools have 30 or 40 toilets. And it's now into waterborne sanitation, things like that as well. So operational plans for different types of toilets, safe on site disposal, water fairs, sports and sanitation, we'll be happy with that. So something goes away. The partner, which in fact is, in this case, in this particular contract, is the company that Effie is the chairperson of. Their role is training and skills relations financial assistance with setting up the micro business. But thereafter, it's not like we've set you up, right, bye-bye, off you go, and if you think, that's fine. It's ongoing, weekly visits, training, periodically come back, more training. And of course, there's a big ask for the partner. If there's a new technological problem that has to be coped with, well then, it's up to them. The little guy, they can't develop a new technique, for example. I've got a picture just now to show you. Okay, this is 2009, the class of 2009, when we started with this. I can tell you about how people were selected and so on, but we haven't got time now. And the practical training in the field. I mean, a lot of people, I can take a point, Madam Chair, a lot of people came along to a very first meeting, a job opportunity. If on Internet behalf of them, they said, you want us to do what? No, we don't want to do this. Give this money. Okay, fine. Okay, good. The training includes all that stuff. Okay. I just have a quick look, and then I'll flip to the next slide. I'll read it. So it's not just about technology, it's also about basic labor, operating all for your cash flow and all that kind of stuff. Some of our micro entrepreneurs, let's have a quick read of that part, Nicole.
Nicole.
Okay. Can I move on? Okay. And PJ. Okay, right. So potential. We're professionalizing it. So it's not fly by night. It's putting on a sound, sustainable basis. It's essentially the main thing that needs to be done. It's not easy to get it done. How do you get it done? How do you set up an institutional system? This is one. It's not going to solve everybody's problems. It's not always going to be the case. Then I want to tell you about what GIZ wants you to do. Intentions reinforce good service. If you don't deliver quality, hey, hey. And if you really don't do it properly at all, sorry, we're pulling off. You have to do it right. Okay? And business for themselves, but not by themselves, because the partner is there. The partner develops with new methods and technologies, and then trains them, attributes, etc., etc. And for example, one of the problems was the toilets in the back of the houses, in many cases, they would look like nobody intended them to be moved to the side of eternity, which of course was completely wrong. But it's a fact. You can't do that. You have to lift them off of the crane, or whatever you want to empty them, put it in the back. So the developers of the trolley thing, you know, that's the kind of stuff that the partner can do. The little guys, they can't actually do this kind of stuff. Setting national goals, it ticks all the boxes. Developing skills in the workplace, job creation at the lowest levels or unemployment at the highest, micro-enterprise creation and new nurturing, BBB, infrastructure service delivery, which improves the service. The service is now available. Delivery is not a pipe in the ground. Commission, that's it. Delivery is water coming out of that pipe, clean, fresh, pure, 24/7 for the next 50 years. That's delivery. Okay. Right. Way forward, a whole lot of things about way forward. Commitment by owners to paperwork. That's the biggest single problem we have. That they pay, we invoice them, and they take months to pay. That is the biggest single problem we have. Every other problem we solve. Commitment to partner with organizations. It's job assurance first in the training office. Is there the job? Otherwise, training people, they're frustrated, there's no work for them. So the work is identified in the, right? And I mean, now we've looked at the whole system, we can find a whole lot of opportunities there, simply in the water services value chain. But also our ambitions are to go beyond that. I've got a little appointment with the Germans from GIZ to look at taking this outside, this whole exchange principles concept, outside of water sanitation only. Like to electricity recirculation, to roads, potholes, depots, metal depots, buildings, that kind of stuff. And particularly the government's plans to roll out a million solar panels on RDP roofs. Now, who is going to maintain that? Who is going to maintain that? That's an ideal opportunity for the same kind of a principle. Among the ones who probably wonder why do that, it's not the expertise. We want these other people are going to do that. We need to find who will be the partners. But the opportunity has to be there, otherwise nobody's going to be interested. So there's plenty of opportunities we want to take outside water sanitation, into housing and solar panels and stuff like that. Maybe of particular interest to you. Okay, go forward, by the way, develop the social exchange, funding, whatever. CSR, and the ethic of the CSR is that there's no proprietary information. Once it's developed, it's put in the public domain. So everything about our water sanitation thing, there's a whole pile of reports published under the name of the Water Research Commission. And then to move a higher level of technology, we'd also like to go moving up the technology level from the pretty low level. My last slide, here you have the class of 2014. There are 25 franchisees are being trained. They're all starting work. They've all started work. They're on to get the process of mentoring and so on. The five of the original ones are now fully fledged PDY Little PDY Limiteds, including Macari and PJ, but these are the people on the ground. Each of them employs 5-10 people, depending on the nature of the task. The people who are regularly with them, it's the full protective clothing and all the rest of it, masks, gloves,
record, and also a suite of four injections before they're allowed to get anywhere near the stuff. Okay. Other more casual workers can be used to dig trenches and things like that. So this is full standard precautions, etc., etc. So please push it with 2014 luck, and those are the kind of main people who've been involved. I'm not empty there, but I've got her MD and Water Research Commissioner Jay Bugger as well. So I'm done. We started with water sanitation because that's the comfort zone of the people who started this thing. I'm an engineer. Oliver Eyes is an engineer, but in fact, all of us are engineers on that list. But we keen to expand and said, GRZ has given me some money, but I just need the opportunity to look at other stuff into housing and growth and electricity and things like that as well. I guess that's it. Ma'am.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Wall. The only thing that you didn't tell us, which communities are you involved in?
Okay.
Where are you now? So in which area? Okay, that's maybe.
This concept is being applied on a commercial basis is where there's been people coming forward and say, we've got the budget, go through the procurement. If you win it, or somebody else wins, that's fine. But if you win it, and so far we've only been working in these, okay? We certainly want to expand. Its Queen is hell of an interested in case, and the Department of Education is also very interested in. I'm actually going to go and see City Council Cape Town this afternoon. They're kind of interested too. But the prerequisite is, if these artists have got budgets for maintenance, there's nothing to talk about. And if they're in promise that they're going to pay reasonably on time, again, there's nothing to talk about. That's the biggest single obstacle. But the most you get, I'm in charge of this municipality, Buffalo City municipality, and then the district are.
We are still in Butterworth. And where it started was in Butterworth. We moved to Antigua, Gala, and Lover,
Copenhagen. And Butler City is the
Butler
City. That's where it is at the moment. It's running commercially at the moment. Thank you very much, Chair. For being here to meet you, I think it's 10 years, but you would like to rent out to other provinces.
Absolutely.
Any questions or clarity? From the members, Honorable Bank.
Thank you, Chair. I want to find out if this program CISOP that's just been delivered now has anything to do with the Bill Gates and Department of Science and Technology program, because they are also operating in the same areas.
Can I respond?
Yes.
Theirs is very much technologically driven. So we're keeping a close tab on what they're doing to see if there's new technologies which can be applied. But this is about an operation. This is about institutional modelling, and they're not into that at all. I know that because I actually applied for funding. This is sorry, it's not what we're dealing with. But we're keeping very close tabs on them. And the Bill and Melinda Gates people have actually been to Eastern Cape to see what's going on. They were there 2 weeks ago.
Yes.
So our crowd were there 2 weeks ago. Talk to me with them. Thank you very much. So
the one that you are asking about is the Honorable Fund, the most technological fund, the one that we are doing at the moment is have to do mainly to do with what the communities have at their disposal that they can use, most part, that kind of thing. But thank you very much. I want to ask something because we really don't have time.
Sorry, change of mindset of what, sir?
Of the people who are in the
leadership. You mean the political leadership, but the owners of the infrastructure?
Maybe in the school, maybe teachers who not have the same opinion as the
To be frank, my understanding of most of the teachers is that it's a problem and they're very pleased it's gone away, someone else is looking after it. But it's certainly assisting them. I mean, so if you think about the girl learners and there's no clean toilet, they don't come to school. Now the kids have got clean toilets. And think about menstruation time, they don't come to school. Now there's a clean place for them. So it's benefiting the kids.
Thank you very much, Mr. Wall. I hope we understand that what is being presented to us here is more community-based. So it's sort of a paradigm shift
from the brain react presentation, we are trying to be at a certain cognitive level in terms of analyzing pain. So this presentation is about communities, is about what is it that they, in terms of skills, in terms of what can be done in their area. And thank you very much, Mr. Well, because
it's about that listing.
Yes. Yeah. And thank you very, very much. It's something that I'm sure the department is looking at keenly, and because we have people from the department here, Mr. Well, so that at least at the end of the day, when those kind of needs come up, we know where to knock. That's one of the reasons why we have invited you to come and present to us. We hope that at a later stage, when we are not pressed for time, we will call you back and unpack the problem more in detail. But thank you very much for your time. I don't know if madam, you want to add anything?
Thank you, Madam Chair. But just one thing I would like to add to what Dr. Waller said is that we piloted the program in Butterworth, and because of the success of it, the Department of Education brought interest. And from our side, there are two things we are very proud of. It is working, and it has created work for people that have not worked. Some of them have never worked in their lives. And today they are earning money, and they're walking tall and paying whatever they have to pay.
And as they walk tall, can you give us numbers more or less? How many people have you empowered?
We're empowered, I stand to be corrected because I don't work on the ground. It's approximately, you're looking at more than 25 people. Every person that is employed, they run their own business, they have at least 5 people working for them.
Just to
And just to add to that, Madam Chair, is that the department has asked us to give a budget to look at how much it would cost to do this just in the Eastern Cape.
Which department?
The Department of Education. And because they are plus minus between 300 and 4,000, between 3 and 4,000 schools in the Eastern Cape, it would be an annual budget of approximately 175 million rand. And this is the reason why it's going to be done in stages.
Thank you very, very much. Particularly when we know that the issue of sanitation,
And also remembering that it's now mainly moving away from our department per se. So it's not really now our scope, but it's something that is very worthwhile to listen to. And in terms of knowing now where you can knock if you need something like that, but it's really, they have been asking us even before we went to the straight plan to come and present. So at that time, I'm sure they didn't even know that sanitation is even human settlement. So we didn't really want to say to them no. So we let them come. And we are a caring government. We let everybody come and talk to us. That's the aim.
Jay, I think there's a lot of positives that come out of that. It definitely fits more on the technical side. I gave Dr. Wall my card because we are still working on the Minister's Academy, and I will engage him around integrating it. And I'm sure if he links to NHBRC, we can then have some conversation that talks about a rural public works program. Mm-hmm. So the ideas are innovative. We are not going to throw them out, and they'll fit under a particular framework. I don't want to say more.
Thank you very, very much, gentlemen. On that note, you can be excused because the last item that we'll be dealing with is just the minutes of the committee. Yes, Mr. Martin, you seem to be wanting to talk to me.
Just one question from me, Madam Chair. We, as we are working with universities, we are trying to get officials and people that participate in the sector to register for the program. What I wanted to ask the committee is whether, would it be a problem if the committee attends the identified program with other officials?
No, not at all. You worried about the fact that we will say as politicians you are dealing with officials. No. This is about capacity building. Capacity building is not about politicians. I don't think so. I don't know. I don't. My committee members, I don't think they are really that creative. This is just to ask about professional development, and we are fine with that. Thank you very much. My committee members are very keen to know how soon can they. That's all they want to know. How soon can you bring the form and the application?
Remember, Chair, we are going to be working with that office and feedback to the chairperson.
Yes.
We will not give that answer now.
Yes, that's fine, Mr. McLean, but as long as we start by the
beginning of next.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Okay.